Another day is here, and you're ready for it. What to wear? Check. Breakfast, lunch, and dinner? Check. Planning for what's next and how to save for it? That's where Bank of America can help. For your financial to-dos, Bank of America has experts ready to help get you closer to your goals. Get started at one of our local financial centers or 24-7 in our mobile banking app. Find a location near you at bankofamerica.com/talktous. What would you like the power to do? Mobile banking requires downloading the app and is only available for select devices. Message and data rates may apply. Bank of America NA, member FDIC.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Kane and Bucks. Can't stop addicted
to the shindig. It's a very good morning to you. A huge show for your Monday morning as we are getting right into the teeth of the AFL season. The Cats are undefeated. Sydney and GWS are absolutely flying. What a weekend of football it was. It was Anzac round, and we've got a big McCafe menu coming up. Geelong star Zach Tui, he kicked a career equaling high 3 goals on the weekend. He was enormous. Tom Morris with all the latest news. No shortage of that. The buck stops here in its regular spot, and your calls on the Mimosa Homes open line 1300 736 736. In fact, if you're up early, if you want to get something off your chest, we have lines available. You will get straight through. That's it, and you can speak to us. Good morning to you, Coxie, the Collingwood champion. The Brownlow medalist, the Norm Smith medalist, Nathan Buckley is alongside of me. As always, Bucks, good morning.
G'day, Kano. How are you, mate?
I'm great.
I have information overload. That's what I've got.
In what? We've just
got to such a point. Like, so we're 7 rounds in. I'm looking at the games, of course. So we've played Wednesday, Thursday, Friday, Saturday, Sunday.
I know.
Is that the first time we've had like 5 days of AFL football in a row for
COVID,
a round?
COVID. Remember those days? It was footy every day.
We had 20 in a row, didn't we? Actually, a short memory. But no, look, there's a lot to get to, but just so much going on. There always is. The Stars are standing up. The young blokes are coming good. We've got teams are starting to separate themselves. You know, styles of play are becoming more obvious, and I've got a bit of a mea culpa, but obviously the Geelong-Carlton game was exceptional, the way that was played and the result itself. So that's worth unpacking. But, there's so much going on around the sport. Individuals, you know, Stars standing up, coaches in
fiery
strife.
Sprays. There's fire. Sam Mitchell.
How good's that?
I thought it was excellent with Scrimshaw yesterday.
I did love the way that, you know, once again, the way we handle the Anzac Day celebration and how important it is for the country. But went to both Wednesday night and Thursday, and they're great occasions at the MCG. And there's something about the MCG as well. When you fill that out and you do that right, it's pretty special.
Just on that, Lee Matthews on Footy Furnace last night says that, you know, we all love the Anzac round, but it does highlight the inequities of some teams in the competition. You played for the biggest and on the biggest stage in front of big crowds. Do you agree with that, that it does highlight that, you know, we've got some players playing in front of 4,000 in Canberra, and then we've got Collingwood and Essendon playing in front of 93, and Geelong and Carlton playing in front of 87 at the MCG. There are different experiences for different players, isn't there? And he probably makes a good point in that. Do you agree?
Well, absolutely. And I think there was a point made about recruiting to Essendon or Collingwood to say, hey, you're going to be a part of the Anzac Day game. Now, we have put other games in around it, but yeah, I do agree.
Did you use that as a recruiting tool ever when you were coaching?
I'm sure it was used.
Yeah.
I can't recall ever sitting there at the front line trying to say that the Anzac Day experience is going to make the difference, but there's no doubt that was a part of the package that was presented, you know, as part of playing for the football club. But I understand where Lee's coming from, and he's right. There are inequities with it, but I can't you know, I suppose it was good fortune to be able to be a part of either one of those clubs in the last 3 decades, with Sheeds bringing it to light again, because there has been Anzac Day occasions before or games before. But, you know, it wouldn't be the same if it was GWS and North Melbourne. That's just the reality of the situation. The showdowns are the showdowns, the derbies are the derbies. I mean, there are big games around, none of Collingwood, Carlton, Essendon, or the bigger Victorian clubs, you know, go and play in those. So that's disequal in some way as well. But you know, I understand where Lee's coming from, but I don't know if you could do it any differently or any better if you're the league.
Can we have an auction update? Where are we at with the Bucks auction?
Oh, yeah, Kingy wants to know where the referendum shirt's got to. I don't think it's received a bid yet, Kingy, so you should be right, mate. Go for it. No, it's on Wednesday, so okay. There's a lot of tie kickers around.
Is there?
But there's, I suppose the club Collingwood and Port Adelaide, keen to secure some of those items. I'm keen for them to secure some of those items. So, but it's in the public forum now, so it's, I'll sit back and have a look.
You've done well. While handling it, I mean, it's a tough one to handle. There's no doubt about that. I think you've done it as well as you possibly could. You got all dressed up on the weekend, I saw it as well.
Yeah, went to a gala fund. It's for, upper intestinal tract cancers, basically. So, pancreatic cancers, which can be one of the most aggressive getting around. So the Hope Fund are a group of surgeons, and I suppose they're investigating how they can better treat these cancers that actually take people really quickly. Mm-hmm. Michael Turner, who played for Geelong and has been just a huge contributor to the Geelong Footy Factory through the Falcons.
The Mickey Turner Footy Factory.
Yeah, done so well. So he was a sufferer of pancreatic cancer, and I think he was diagnosed 14 months ago, and he's since had part of his pancreas out, and I think you have to rip out a fair bit of other tissue to try and protect yourself and guard against it. He's going well at the moment. He dropped 15 kilos real quick. But he's a healthy guy, just about to turn 70, but told his story and told it very well to the room about his challenges and why he's passionate about trying to help this research along as well. So, my partner Brody's a business manager at one of the surgeons at the surgery. So, mate, I went along as a handbag.
Ah, good. You look good. I thought you both scrubbed up pretty well. Alex says there's a bit going on here, lads. Bucks has got the auction, and Kane has bought a 1985 Mazda car, Lemon.
What's the latest in that? Well, Mazdas were a great car choice for a first car.
Well, that's what I thought, but I thought I did all of the right things here. I thought I did all the right things. It was in the family. It had been sitting in a driveway. I went and got it serviced and safety checked, and then when it came out, it just wasn't
when
what
you say
I thought
in the family, how long has it been in the family for?
Well, it was Lucy's mum's car, so they bought it new in 2003. Then that was passed on to Lucy's sister, and she's had it, but she hasn't really driven it because they sort of upgraded the family car. So it's just sat in their driveway, and I thought that'd be a good first car for Ed. And so I've been sitting there and got it what I thought to be serviced and fixed up, but then got it out, and it's not what I thought it was going to be. So I'm going to have to sort that out. Sitting in the driveway.
The clutch and the transmission are gone. So what?
Must be.
So your mother-in-law has been riding the clutch hard, doing doughies.
No, it's an automatic, so I don't know. It just wouldn't
park brakies
progress through the gears. So I've got this Lemon sitting in my driveway and trying to work out what we do from there.
Well, my first car was a Datsun 120Y.
Was it?
Yeah. I don't know. I don't even know what the year was, but I got my hands on it in 1990. Yeah. Mum put it on the open market, tried to sell it for $900. It was sitting out the front of the house, and I don't know how you used to sell cars back in the late 80s.
In the paper.
But, correct. But, no one bought it for $900, so she offered it to me for $500, and I took it. Took it down to Adelaide, and that was my first car.
Go well for you?
I did what every whatever a young bloke would do. I put a $1,200 stereo system in it, so it was worth three times the value of the car, or two and a half times the value of the car. On the way to Birkenhead at 5 o'clock to work at the James Hardy factory, the brakes failed and I had to replace the master cylinder with $2,000 to replace a master cylinder and a
adding
Datsun.
Up here. Yeah. $500, you've spent $1,500 on the stereo.
Well, that's don't be a cheapskate, Kane.
That's what I did.
It'll cost you money.
Yeah, definitely cost me money. Morning boys, can you please ask Kingy why he doesn't like Geelong? You get a lot of that, don't you? Who's the team that you get feedback on that people say,
Bucks, why
don't you like us? Do you get any of that?
Yeah.
I got a couple.
Yeah, it's Carlton a
lot. Is that really?
Yeah, and that's just...
But you like
that's
Carlton?
Just, no, I do, but that's this old school Carlton Collingwood. So as soon as I'm not positive about Carlton, I'm a Collingwood Carlton hater.
Yeah.
A little bit about Essendon at times, but then again, it's... There's been a fair bit to get down on, although they're going really well at the moment. They're the main two.
Did you get into Liv at all? Like, I'm not a massive golf fan, but what it did to Adelaide was extraordinary. Like, the different crowd that Liv Golf is bringing in to the golf. Like, my boys went on Friday, and the thing that they loved about it is you get so close to the players. Like, yeah, a chat with Phil Mickelson. Like, and he was trying to help Phil find his ball. And he just couldn't. He couldn't.
I thought you were about to say he's trying to help Phil find his swing.
Phil sort of ball went into the bush, and him and his mates are helping Phil look for this ball. Like, it's unbelievable. And then you see the party crowd and the party holes and the younger generation of golf fan that he's bringing in. I don't know if they're golf fans or not, but if anyone was out there that went to Adelaide for Liv or watched it on Channel 7, thought the coverage was excellent, or listened to it with us here on SEN. In fact, let's have a bit of a listen to whispering Nick Del Santo and Miles Fitzner as Cam Smith put the putt in to win the team's event at Liv yesterday.
Two putts to win, Del.
Feet are set. Putter face square. Cam Smith for Australia. For the Rippers. Eddie's in. Oh! It was in and hopped out after grabbing a big, big corner. But he taps it in anyway.
So Cam Smith for Team Ripper GC in the home event here at the Grange Golf Club in Adelaide. They stood up on the second playoff hole.
Whispering.
That
whispering.
Is unbelievable.
Feet are set. Putter face is square.
Putter face is square. But then I want to, there's a lot to unpack there. How do you catch the corner of a circular hole?
He caught it early. But no, it was amazing.
Commentator's curse.
Cam Smith doing shoeies and the players seemed to love it. At the footy on Friday night, there was Liv Golfers there. There was sort of a chip at half time. It was amazing. So I did love the relaxed nature of the players and how it did bring in the younger generation. But if you were there, let us know.
I heard Pat Welsh talking about it, like interviewed about it. And I remember his voice is
great voice.
Is the voice of golf as far as I'm concerned. Growing up, like he was the one that was talking about the shark. He was the one that was on Ian Baker Finch and like that was giving me the information around golf when I was a young fella. So I heard him talking about it. He said he's never seen anything like it. He's never heard anything like it. It's louder. It's there's more going on than he's ever seen before. And he was loving it. So rather than being a fuddy-duddy and looking down his nose and being disappointed about where's golf has got to, he was super pumped.
It is
about
like Happy Gilmore in a way, like that movie, like so many years ago, and this is what it has turned into is amazing, really. Hey, let's get to Wally, who's in Ferntree Gully. You want to speak about footy supporters, Wal? Good morning.
Morning, fellas. How are we?
Good.
Very well.
I was fortunate enough to get to a couple of games as a neutral supporter, Carlton, Geelong, and then Sydney and Hawthorn yesterday. Just wanted to comment that Geelong and Sydney's transition ball movement is absolutely elite and it's going to be very hard to stop come finals times. But then again, as a Bombers supporter, it's stacking up okay against some of the top of sides, obviously with being played with Collingwood. Just want to grab your thoughts, fellas.
Well, I think, Bucks, you're going to speak about what Geelong are doing with their ball movement in the back. Buck stops, aren't you?
Yeah, I think Geelong, Sydney, which Wally's pointed out really well, GWS are the other ones. Just their transition, you support your defence and then go. And I think there's a bit of rope-a-dope. You know, there's that run and gun style is excellent to watch, but it comes from a really solid defensive structure. So the sides that are doing that well are going to be bloody hard to beat, and I think we will see tactics evolve as the year goes on. But I think it's really good to watch. It seems really good to watch, and when you see that end to end transition end in a score, and the good sides do it well, I think that's exciting footy. But it could get bogged down at times through winter, but we'll see how that goes.
Johnny wants to know, Bucks, what car did you have when you were on the Gold Coast in 93? A lot of the Brisbane Bears players rolled up with the sports cars, which were black back then.
It escalated quickly for me.
Did it?
Yeah.
What did you go to?
From a Datsun 120Y to my mum's Mazda 626. And then from the Mazda 626, I went and bought my own. The first car I bought, you know, that I sort of saw and thought, rather than getting it handed down from mum and dad, was a Mazda 626 coupe. It was a two-door, and that was $4,500. It was electric blue. I had personalised number plates. Bucks.
What? Did you really?
Yep. And I thought I was so cool. I was, and it had little 14-inch rims, mags, fats. It had the whole box and dice. I think I even had a spider on my gear stick.
What happened to those plates? So that Bucks.
Yeah, I don't know. They should be in the auction. I don't know where they are. It did escalate quickly. I ended up. I had a BMW. Six series CSI. I think it was a 630, I think. So a 3 litre six cylinder, and it rusted out. But I spent money on this. I saw it when I was driving around at Port Adelaide, and I thought, if I make it, I'm going to get that car, because it was cars. That's status was all about cars back then, or at least it was for me as a young bloke coming through.
Well, you made it. We'll get to Frank, Michael, and Runga on the Mimosa Homes open line on the other side of this. We're up and running on SEN Breakfast on your Monday morning. I've got a Netflix show, which I know you're big on, and every now and then you give us a recommendation. I'm watching this show, which is all the rage at the moment, and I don't know if I like it or not. I'm certainly not enjoying it, but I'm appreciating it for what it is. We might discuss that on the other side of this as well.
Kane and Bucks. Can't stop addicted to the
shanty. Sixth of the best. Hit the road with Sixth Car and Truck Rental. Visit sixth.com.au to book today.
The sixth of the best performances from the weekend. Book car and truck rental is Sixth at sixth.com.au. Bucks, it's your turn this week.
Yeah, look, I'm going to go from further away, from the start of the round to the end. So Andy McGrath, I thought, in the Anzac Day clash was fantastic. Like, Merritt got the award, and I thought that was well deserved. But I just loved Andy McGrath's game and the way that he's begun the season. So I think he's been first class. Can't go past Jeremy Cameron. Five goals, getting up the ground, and we'll talk about that a little bit longer. I want to put another guy in from there. Mark Pitnett.
Oh,
I think when coaches talk about making the teammates around you better, like he's to make Paddy Cripps and Sam Walsh better, you're doing your role pretty well. And I think he's elevating some of the Carlton's best players.
He may have played his best two games in a row of his career in the last 2 weeks.
You know, we forget real quick where Carlton began in 2022. And we were talking about the stoppage beast that they'd become. They were scoring from centre bounce. Like, that was the last time that he was up and healthy. So let's not forget that Carlton have got that. You know, they lost their stoppage game, started focusing more on turnover. But we've seen now when Pitnett's on the field, the stoppage game goes again. So he was fantastic. Caleb Sarong just kept going. Now, had ably assisted by the old warhorse, Nat Fyfe, who turned back the
clock.
Didn't he?
Yeah. Well, for Sarong, I mean, it's a club record, 17 clearances. And so there's some players out there, and I'm interested in your thoughts, 0433 98 11 16. Unconditional effort, regardless of how the game's going, how their own form is going, that you can never, ever question effort. And for a little guy, he's someone that I admire. It was rapt that he was All-Australian last year because he was so consistent, but he's just unconditional, and he's a teammate you'd love to play alongside of.
Absolutely. Love the way he goes about it, and his work rate's through the roof. The fifth guy, we've got Noah Anderson. He's probably, you know, spoke about after the game being tagged the week before, hadn't had that close checking run with against him and learned a lot about that. He's not going to face that often, but I suppose when you've been, if you haven't faced it much, it is a shock to the system when you've been able to run around sort of in between, sort of turnover and transition, find your 30, you know, have your 6, 8, 7, 8 tackles.
Well, just his clearances. Numbers yesterday, Bucks, like this is triple-double sort of stuff if you follow the NBA. He's had 33, he's had 12 clearances, 11 inside 50s, he's kicked 2 goals, 9 score involvements, number one ranked player on the ground by a mile, but they destroyed them from stoppage yesterday, Gold Coast, and no Harley Reid, young player, understand that, but that was where the game was won for them yesterday.
Jared Witt's probably a bit stiff not being included in our stiff. Six. And the final one's Nick Blakey. There's so many of the Swans players that find the ball, that use it really well by hand and foot, in particular by foot, and Nick Blakey just breaks the game open. And we had Wally sort of ringing about Geelong's and Sydney's ability to transition from back half to score, and Nick Blakey's a big reason why the Swans have been able to do that consistently.
There you go. Sixth of the best performances from the weekend. Now, Frank's been waiting patiently. What'd you make of Liv, Frank?
I enjoyed the golf, but I didn't enjoy the background music all the time. I know you have the party hole, but when you hear the music going the whole time, I was wondering whether the players had to listen to that as well. I thought it was a little bit off-putting. You know, I don't know what you
think. Damn you people, this is golf! What a rock concert!
There's a bit of that, wasn't there, from Happy Gilmore. I think that's just what it is. I think the younger crowd loved it, but I understand that it can be a little bit annoying for those traditional golf fans. That's why I was asking the question, because it's completely different to anything we've seen. Foreign, really, but Adelaide love it, and it seems to be working.
Text here, there was a bit of cheating going on by the Aussie crowd yesterday, standing on balls and making noises in the opposition's backswing, but nobody will say it in the media.
Yeah, well, it was amazing that, like, with this team's, because it went to a playoff, a couple of playoff holes, and as the international team was missing, the crowd was cheering. So they had a poor shot, and they ended up in the bunk. One guy had a shot from the bunker and ended up stealing the bunker. The crowd's just going off, like cheering for a bad shot.
Oh, no.
I've never seen, not anything like
what
we've seen.
You know what I think about booing.
I know.
And jeering. Don't like that.
You don't like it?
Even no. Well, if I don't like it in footy, how are you going to go and how you
pay their money?
Go
they
in
can
golf.
Do what they want.
Oh, can they?
Michael's in Preston. Jamie Elliott's mark. Where does it rank for you, Michael?
Yeah, well, that's what I was going to ask you. Where is it? I think it beats Moorcroft's. And about Smith's, it's got to be the equivalent of that.
Is it the equivalent of Moorcroft's the best mark I've ever seen at AFL?
And let's give Brad Johnson some credit here. If you're going to take a hanger, you need the bloke underneath you to stiffen up and still think that he's a chance to jump and get the ball, because that gives you the second lift.
The second boot. He didn't get the second lift. That's what I was going to say.
He got a little bit of a second lift, but it could have got a little bit more. Ben McKay just folded a little bit underneath him. It could have been anything. But once again, you're not. It's a dance. The two of them have to help create that moment. And Jamie Elliott's been doing it for a long time, but it was, an awesome mark.
And Rungi, you want to speak about the Blues. Good morning.
Good morning, Ken and Buck. How are we?
Good.
Very well.
Look, normally I ring when we lose, upset and talking about Plowman normally, but thank God he's not there this year. And this is the only time I thought, even though we lost, our depth is really good. And I watched the replay again, and we had so many opportunities we could have killed that game. But there are days that you're never supposed to win that game. But the only one I want to tell you guys is, we had about 7 A-grade players missing in that team, I think. And we won't lose to Geelong again this year. And remember the last time ANZAC, they had a draw. Which year was that? And who won the grand final that year?
Nicely done. True.
That's a long bow.
That is a long bow.
This one, this is... Hey, Bucks, big fan, 40-year Collingwood member in the charcoal Mazda CX-5, apologising for not getting out of your way on Thursday before the Anzac Day clash.
Do you remember that?
You were clearly running late, but tailgating doesn't do you any favours on the road.
Were you tailgating?
This guy was travelling at like 20 k's in 40, and it was like it was only 100 metres from me turning left onto Batman Avenue. He pulled up and he would have been a good half car length or even a full car length in front of him. And you know how you're sort of one car from being able to slide down
the left?
So I just give him a turn and I was 15 minutes late. I nearly got out of the car, like put it in park, nearly got out of the car. Just was going to walk beside his car and just have a look at the gap that he had chose not to go into. And he obviously had his... He was obviously pissed off at me for
road rage. This is a bit of road rage.
I wasn't going to get narky, but I was going to highlight, hey, mate, have a look at this 2 metres here that I was asking you to move into the last 30 seconds.
We're in the Kogan Mobile Studio. Kogan's got you covered with 120 gigs for $120 used across 12 months. Kogan.com. It's clicking awesome. It is news time. We'll be back after this.
A sports update for Kiza. Sitting on the sidelines? Get back in the game with Kiza Physiotherapy, Rehabilitation and Strength Training.
All right, let's get to the sports update for Kiza. Tired of pain, it's time to try Kiza. There's some MRO news, of course, and Tom Morris will be all over that when he joins us a little bit later on. But Western Bulldogs' Riley West has been handed a one-match ban by the MRO for rough conduct on Brandon Walker. This one will get chucked out, surely. It actually has to be enough force to be a reportable offence.
Did he? How long was he off for?
He had a concussion test, but wasn't concussed.
Okay.
So I mean, it's not dissimilar to. Well, it is dissimilar, but it's not the contact with the Hogan one last week. It was a stupid act, but it wasn't enough to be reportable. So it gets thrown out. I'd be really surprised if the Dogs, particularly with Cody Waitman out, don't challenge this one. I think Riley West.
Well, they will, but
will get off.
You reckon he'll get off?
Yep.
Well, we've gone so far down this path. It'll be interesting to see where it goes. Even the King of Concussion, David King, reckons that Jack Higgins should get off.
Really?
Mm.
Is that what you've called Kingy? The King of Concussion?
That's what I just called him. But he's been saying any head contact at all has got to go. And how long are we gonna sit around the dark ages for? And now he's actually saying that someone should get off for a dangerous tackle.
Mm.
Which clearly can't happen given the rules way it is at the moment.
Do you think he should get off? Higgins?
No, I think he's probably a two-weeker. And I've been on the other side, that thinking that that we're trying to legislate against misfortune and that you can't take head contact out of the game. But the way that the rules are written, he'll challenge it, and I think he'll save a week, but I can't see him getting on.
All right, we might discuss that a little bit later on. As we heard earlier, the Australian LIV Golf team, Ripper GC, is taking out the team's event at LIV Golf in Adelaide with the quartet of Cam Smith, Mark Leishman, Matt Jones and Lucas Herbert winning the first ever LIV team playoff, requiring 2 playoff holes to seal victory. American Brendan Steele took the individual honours by 1 stroke. What's happening in the EPL, Bucks?
In the Premier League, Arsenal has won the North London Derby against Ange Postecoglou's Tottenham. So 3-2 they were able to win, Arsenal, to hold a 1-point lead at the top of the Premier League table. So a great win for them and a poor loss for Tottenham. Manchester City defeated Nottingham Forest 2-0 and now sit behind Arsenal but have a game in hand. In other results, Bournemouth defeated Brighton 3-0.
And in the A-League finals, they've been confirmed after the conclusion of the 23-24 home and away season. Victory is going to host City in the first Melbourne Derby A-League final in 9 years when they face off in an elimination final on Sunday. while Sydney FC will host MacArthur on Saturday. The winners will play Wellington Phoenix and the Mariners in a two-leg semi-final series to advance to the grand final. And just some news from INC. Of course, INC is one of Chemist Warehouse brands. They're pretty excited to announce their new ambassadors. Charlie Curno is going to sign up as an INC ambassador. Isaac Quaynor and Aaron Phillips joining the brand as official faces of 2024. Of course, Mario from Chemist Warehouse is wrapped with that news, so they're pumped to announce that this morning. Baby Rain,
great athletes.
Oh, Aaron, did you see Aaron Phillips hit a golf ball? She was a
no.
Played at the Live as part of some sort of celebrity.
She's not one of those boring people that's just great at everything.
She just smashed it. So basketball,
yeah, good.
Football, golf for Erin Phillips. She's an incredible athlete. This Netflix show, Baby Reindeer, I know I'm just probably a month late to the party on this. I'm not sure if I like it, but I'm appreciating the show that it is and how clever and unique it is, but pretty confronting and pretty brutal. I was watching it last night. I'm not enjoying this at all.
Right.
But I was appreciating it for what it was. But I think you should check it
out.
Is it like a
dark underbelly type?
No, true story about essentially a stalker.
Right.
And you can just see how it's got big on him, this guy.
Really?
Yeah. But it's pretty confronting, and some of the stuff that happens in it is pretty horrific. But if you're looking for something unique,
like a murky underworld type thing, things that happen under the rock when you pick the rock
it's
up.
Just so many twists and turns on this.
I finished Tree Body Problem 2, the first series.
How many stars?
Three and a half out of five.
Yep.
What I would say is it's made by the same guys that did Game of Thrones. So when you get to the end of the first series, you realise why they made a lot of cash and why they're actually good at doing what they're doing. There is that many directions that this show can now take, and it's very likely that it'll be five or six series in.
Gotcha.
So if you're going to commit...
Do they butcher the ending like Game of Thrones or...?
Well, that's the ending, Game of Thrones.
There's no ending.
That's like after eight or nine series. But
right.
I think they've already written a story that's probably got another five or six series in it. So you've got to be in for the long haul.
In for the long haul. That was our Netflix recommendations for Charlie Battisti & Co., Melbourne's most trusted repairer of prestige German vehicles. I've got to pull up your socks. Don't worry about that. 1-300-736-736 on the Mimosa Homes open line. Who needs to pull their socks up? We'd love your thoughts after this.
That sports update was for Supergroups. From 1 ton to 8 ton, Supergroups are the masters of Kubota excavators.
Kane and Bucks. Can't stop addicted to the shindig.
Pull up your socks.
You could have run and intercepted that first goal.
I'm so done with this team.
So get out there and attempt to do as I ask.
If you don't want to defend, grab your bag and walk out.
Pull up your socks. For all-day comfort, everyday quality and everyday style. It has to be all-day socks by Underworks.
They are great socks, let me tell you that. I wear them every day, and we've got a $50 Underworks voucher by all-day socks from Underworks. They're the comfiest socks ever, up for grabs, and also a Signet Boost power bank valued at $44.95. A Signet Boost power bank's going to keep everything powered 24/7. Do you have anyone who needs to pull those socks up nice and high?
Who? Yeah. Anyone who has referred to Jake Waterman as Wayne Carey or Tony Lockett in the last 3 weeks.
Well, why?
Because they keep going, oh, here he is, Jake Plugger Waterman. Like, it's just because he's actually had 3 good weeks and kicked a few bags of goals. Give him the credit he deserves. He's worked really hard. He's getting a little bit better supply. The ball's coming down faster. And he's getting on the end of it and finishing.
Was Lynchy in the commentary yesterday, I think it was, that said his teammates are calling him Duck.
Okay.
So his teammates need to pull their socks up.
Some of them are and some of them should. But no, I think it's just shade. This young fella's playing, like, he's working hard. He's not a 10 out of 10 natural talent, but he's a 10 out of 10 work rate guy, and I really respect what he's done. He's sitting third on the Coleman. Good on him.
Pull your socks up. Tony Jones made a very good point on the Sunday football show yesterday. Remember in pre-season we were talking about the media access that players are now required to give?
Yes.
Have we seen any of that? Like, they're supposed to be up for grabs after every game, every player, whoever you want, the media you can get. Now, at times, player interviews can be a bit monotonous and a little bit boring, and I understand they're not everyone's cup of tea. They're certainly not mine always. But have we seen anything different with media access to players than we've seen in the previous years? I would say no.
Not I.
No, nothing. No. So to the AFL for bringing this in and not enforcing it, pull your socks up. And the other one as well that I want to mention is with the Higgins tackle on Aaliyah, pull your socks up to anyone who is critical of Aaliyah for trying to kick the ball. That is what you are required to do. The rules state if you've had prior, if you get tackled, you are required to make an effort to dispose of the ball. Then we're sitting there being critical of Aaliyah for trying to kick it. He's got one arm. He can't handball it. His only option in the rules is to kick the ball. How could you be critical of Aaliyah and place any blame on him for trying to kick the ball? That's what he has to do.
Who's been critical?
Jordan Lewis.
Oh, critical of Aaliyah.
He's suggesting that it's half Aaliyah's fault for trying to kick the ball and put himself in a vulnerable position. That's what has led to the concussion. Like, come on. That's the only option he's got. Otherwise, it's holding the ball.
Well, a lot of these sling tackles, head contact, the wrestle in a tackle is a contest of its own. It's the tackler trying to stop the ball carrier disposing of the ball effectively. And more, we have got the ball carrier choosing either not to try and dispose of it at all and take the advantage of not having prior and then just cause a stoppage. But very, very real, or very often now, we're seeing the contest allowed to go too long, which sees these incidents, I reckon, occur. So we can fix the way that holding the ball is interpreted would change a lot of the contact that we're seeing in tackles.
James is in Frankston. You want to speak about the Blues? James, welcome.
G'day, boys. How you doing?
Great.
That's all right. I'm really frustrated about our small forwards. They don't do enough. No tackle pressure. Geelong just walked it out of the forward line last week, and they've done probably pretty much so for the whole year. You know, they're getting one or two tackles a game. They can't keep the ball inside 50.
Well, Motlop would help, wouldn't he?
Well, you've got an embarrassment of them, James. There's a lot of players in that mix that can do that job, and you've got to balance it too with guys that are pressure first, touches second, or impact second from a scoreboard perspective. And you've got to keep. I think you've got a lot of competition for spots there, which is great. Yeah, Durden, Owies, Motlop, who's been injured, who could come back in.
Martin's the other. I know he doesn't necessarily play that high-pressure role, but he's an important player for them. They haven't had access to him either.
It's really interesting. Like you look at the counter position was Geelong's high forwards. And I think Melbourne have got a really good high forward mix and good competition for it. Collingwood have got that. GWS have got that. I think if you don't have the depth and breadth and competition for spots through that role, I don't think you can be a contender in today's footy. Mm. And the best sides have definitely got it. But I think your boys have been pretty good the Carlton boys have been pretty good for a long time, James. And especially when you're going long to contests, you're going to get plenty of opportunities. But yeah, Geelong were pretty slick getting out.
Good on you, Jimmy. I'll put you back to Mitch. You can win those amazing prizes thanks to Underworks and also Signet. We're powered by Kubota. Take on any job with Kubota's mowers, tractors and Land Pride attachments.
Kane and Bucks. Can't stop
addicted to the shit. Yeah, it is Kane and Bucks for your Monday morning. There's a lot we're going to work through in the next couple of hours. Can't wait to do that alongside of you. Tom Morris with all of the news. Zach Tuohy, speaking of brilliant current players that are excellent media performers, He's in my top five, 0433981116, those players that you love to hear in the media on the back of that media access. But Zach Tuohy always speaks his mind. He was excellent on the weekend, so looking forward to doing that.
Beauty. I have a quick question for him. I'm down at Elwood. It's turned into little Dublin. There's Irish people everywhere down there at the moment.
What about the music after he was kicking his goals on the weekend? That was great.
Well, it was first Callum Brown early in the season and now Wozzeck Tui.
Loved it. Tassie Lizards, you're about to leave us for Brett and Painty. Those boys will be up and about. Everyone else, the buck stops here is next. We're here for Melbourne Airport Parking. You can book online for the best rates, melbourneairport.com.au. And for Sonos, experience game-changing sound this season with Sonos. The buck stops next.
Kane and Bucks. Can't stop addicted
to the shindig. It's a very good morning. If you're just waking up to us this morning, thanks for your company. You can get involved on the Mimosa Homes open line and join in the conversation with us whenever you like. 1300 736 736. On the McCafe menu, our official coffee partner, Geelong star Zach Tui, Tom Morris with the news, questions without notice and more. But on a Monday morning at this time, we do this.
To Buckley, who won.
The buck stops here. For supergroups. From 1 tonne to 8 tonne, supergroups are the masters of Kubota excavators.
Right, okay, now let's jump straight in. My main point this morning is around the way the game is played, and I reckon the flood is back.
The flood's back.
The flood's back. Yeah, it used to be a derogatory term around protecting your back half and just parking the bus and not allowing the opposition to score, but the flood is back. And I think the Geelong-Carlton game showed it more than any other. And potentially, I think it's the teams that are doing this are actually the teams that are giving themselves the best chance to contend.
From our perspective, we're not setting the game up to say, let's have the ball live in our back half and when we can get it through, we'll score. But I think that's how a few of our games have panned out a little bit. It's not necessarily by design. We're certainly not setting up to start our forward forays from the back half. But the key for us is making sure, well, if that happens, that we don't get scored against every time. And I thought the way we held up against their inside 50 dominance was really solid.
I think Chris speaks with forked tongue.
Explain.
I think he's got more than one arrow in his quiver. There's no doubt that Geelong have always been a defence first side. So at stoppage, they'll always set up with an extra number. And we saw time and time again, if it was in a fast turnover or in a stoppage loss, Geelong always had an extra number around either Harry Mackay or Charlie Kerner. Now, sometimes that was defender, sometimes it was a winger, like Jeremy Cameron. Yeah. We talk about players given a licence to go wherever they like. Traditionally, every team has a player who goes behind the ball if they want to hold up. And this might be a phase. You know, you see a red sign or something, and it'll go, okay, last 2 minutes of a quarter, or when the opposition's kicked three goals. I reckon Jeremy Cameron just does it.
Whenever he
feels it, yeah.
It looked like that on Saturday.
And he from a wing, he gets all the way back and he doesn't keep his width as a wingman, just sliding. He just goes into the hole. And when you've got that capacity, that capability, and you've got the experienced players that can action it, it just means that you're always supporting your back six. Wingers have always done it, but if you've got a forward that goes and does it, and then you've got a ruckman that gets behind and goes and does it, already you've got 9-10 bodies. Yeah, they're not setting up for starting their offense. They're still a very high pressure, at ball pressure side, Geelong, but they're joining Sydney, they're joining GWS, and Melbourne are probably the other ones, Fremantle are the other ones, who don't need to win the inside 50 count by huge numbers to have a significant gap in the scoring.
So explain to me, and explain to the average footy fan out there who's going, okay, well, that's fine. We've got our numbers in the defensive 50 and we are flooding. You're essentially saying Geelong are flooding. Then wouldn't logic suggest that when you win the ball back in your back half, you are kicking it to all the opposition's extra numbers who should be set up with their spares? How is it that Geelong can transition the ball through the numbers that they've got in their back half to score as efficiently as they did when Carlton should have the extra numbers? Because that's just what logic suggests.
Yeah, but you said kicking as a choice of possession or disposal with that, and that's not what Geelong are doing. Geelong are running the ball out, and GWS run the ball out, and Collingwood which is why they will be in the mix for a long time because of the way they set up the ground. They set up the ground to protect their defence, and they're one of the best teams when they're going at going end-to-end and scoring from the back.
So it's about running the ball with your numbers, link up, handball, forward handball, change, and then you're out and then you're kicking it to an open forward.
Richmond were dominant in the competition for 4 or 5 years there, a period, they always had an extra number. They always had Grimes, Vlosten as an extra who supported their back half. And they had wingmen that would work all the way back and then all the way forward. And when we talked to Zach Tui after eight, I'll ask him about, because he ended up kicking 3 goals off the wing, sliding really hard forward. So this is a hard, high work rate game of footy that Geelong are playing. So they had 45 insides to 66. So 45 insides to score 18 goals. And they did something similar against Adelaide 3 or 4 weeks back. But they're averaging, they've got the same number of inside 50s as their opposition across the season to date, but they're plus 180 points for that time. We've got Sydney, who are only plus 4 inside 50s as an average against their direct opposition, but they're plus 230 points. So what you're seeing here, and GWS are probably at the high end, they're plus 6. So their inside differential is a lot better, but they're plus 200 points. So the sides that we're looking at are the sides that defend their back third really well because they've got the work rate to get numbers behind, but then they've got the ability to work the ball with numbers through the opposition's midfield and then to score really well when they go inside 50. So the sides that are doing it the best, Sydney, Geelong, GWS, Melbourne to a certain extent, but they're a little more dour. They get back to support, but they're probably not scoring as well the other way, but they're protecting really well. Question will be is does stoppage matter? Does clearances and contested ball, does it make the big difference in today's footy? Because the jury suggests that, or the evidence suggests that maybe it's not as important as it was in yesteryear.
This time last week, we had a discussion around Geelong, and you said they're doing everything that they can do. They're playing against who they're playing in, but who have they beaten? There's no buts now, Bucks. Can you? We at least agree on that.
No, they stood up really well. You know, Carlton could have won that game, and it was a high quality game. Carlton's best players played really well. Geelong's structure,
their set up. There are no buts.
Yeah,
on Geelong.
But it's round 7.
Gee, you're stubborn. All right, let's move on.
But it's round 7.
Let's move on.
The flip side of that is Carlton and their midfield. We've spoken about Pitnett early and how he's came in and made a significant difference. Cripps is playing as good a footy as we've seen, and Sam Walsh has come into the fold. Yeah, they're going to worry a lot with that midfield. And, Vossi wasn't happy, but, they're still doing a fair bit right.
Yeah, it's a pretty good battle. I mean, you know, I thought we certainly got plenty of looks through the middle of the ground. Our mids gave us plenty of drive. We got territory from right part of the game. So, there's no issue there. The mids have gone to work.
Yeah, and I thought I wanted to single out one of his players, one of Vossi's players, and didn't play a lot early, but Sam Walsh has come in the last 3 weeks. So I was actually asked after his first game on Fox, if you had a choice, you had to take one player for 5 years, and I'll ask you this one now. Sam Walsh or Connor Rosie, who are you taking for the next 5 years?
Oh, it varies. If you asked me 3 weeks ago, I would have said Rosie.
Well, that was off the back of Rosie's first half where he had 20 touches.
In the Essendon game. Now he's done a hammy. He's been missing for 3 weeks, and Walsh has come in and done what he has done. I think it's line ball. It depends what you want. If you want reliable, consistent, hardworking, unbelievable leader, you go with Walsh. If you want a bit of brilliance and a bit of star power and a bit of X factor and a bit of match-winning ability and probably more craft around the goals, you go Rosie. So
I said Rosie at the time because I wasn't sure about Sam Walsh's availability, like or whether he was going to – what's going on with his back and how that's going to transpire. But watching in the last 3 weeks, he's averaging 33 touches and that's not – the be-all and end-all. He's averaging 8 tackles. He's averaging 6 clearances, 13 contested possessions. But for me, it is his no-nonsense, turns up every moment of the game that he is involved, he is invested in it, he makes an impact. I get the sense, and we saw this late last year with his performances in finals, the bigger the games get, the more impactful he will become. Now, he's played really good footy now, just jumped straight back in and has not missed a beat. I love, he's always there. He's the third bloke at every one-on-one. He's the fifth bloke at a two-on-two. He outnumbers as hard as any. I think his kicking is effective. It's not, he's not a scalpel with it, but his kicking is really effective. But he's just his ability to be the extra number at the contest, whether it's defensive to stick a tackle and pressure or whether it's to win the ball. I'm really going to enjoy watching this bloke play, and I reckon the longer seasons go in terms of getting deep into towards finals, or you know, games that 8-point games that need to be won in August or games in September, I think he's going to separate himself as he goes along.
You can have your say on that. 0433981116. What are you making of the Lions and their coach?
Yeah, well, really interesting. I heard with interest your comments about Chris Fagan's post-match presser, and I think I recognise where he's at.
Where's that?
The work that he's done with the group, the commitment that he's shown to this group, the success that they have had without having the ultimate, they have had success. But let's just remind ourselves about a couple of those comments, and then we'll come back.
It sounds all like doom and gloom, but this group has been so good for the last 5 years. I admire them and respect them for the efforts that they've been able to put in over the last five seasons. And, you know, I'm not going to sit here and bag the team for the way that they performed tonight. I'm in it with them, you know. And the way forward is together.
I admire them and respect them for what they've been able to do in the last 5 years, and I'm in it with them. It's a really... like the conversations that will take place in the four walls at Brisbane, you know, probably would have been taking place the last couple of weeks, but this week in particular, like going forward, that Chris Fagan is a coach who's put himself at the same level of his senior players, and he's put his trust and faith with them. And
is that the right move?
I think it largely has been. You can't criticise what they've been able to achieve.
What's the alternative to not put yourself in with the players?
I think that old school coaching was the coach stayed above and told players what to do, like discipline them heavily,
Give me an example.
Strips off them if talk about effort. If their effort wasn't there, I think that's still, I just reckon, listen to Brassy way back when, and you know, I think Lee Matthews is probably a guy that stayed above, but always stayed above his players, but still treated them like men. I think when sometimes old school, you stay above your players, it's nearly like it's a contest. It's a hierarchy. I think the modern coaching has come a little bit more to trust and have faith and to walk with some of you with your senior players and your senior core and your locker room a little bit more than you would have done in yesteryear. And I think Fakes has done that effectively well. I think that's the type of man manager that he naturally was and has become.
Is there a but coming?
Well, the but is, what do you do now? So when your players aren't giving you the necessary effort, you know, short of, you know, you look them in the eye, you go, and you've, for the last 5 years, you're going, like, this is, here's the evidence. We need a better effort, you know, whether it's Josh Dunkley or whether it's Lachie Neal or whether it's Harris Andrews. And they've responded to that for 5 years, but eventually that message wears thin. And there's got to be repercussions. So there's got to be selection repercussions. Chris Fagan has to separate himself in some shape or form from this tight connection that he has with his existing leaders. And he's got to change his language to stop talking about what they've done in the last 5 years and to start worrying about what they're doing right now.
So are you suggesting he's under pressure? Because 8 games ago or whatever it was, they lose a grand final by under a kick. And now we're 8 games. It's only 8 games, and we're starting to say, is this a guy under pressure?
Well, 2 games ago, oh, don't worry about 8 games ago, 2 games ago, Brisbane took on Melbourne on the MCG and looked amazing. But when you get fluctuations in effort like that, and that it is, it's effort and energy. When you get fluctuations in effort and energy from the same group in such a short space of time, how do you challenge that?
Mm.
Yeah, you've got to sharpen the saw. There's got to be some repercussions in some shape or form. And Fakes has always been a guy who goes back and trusts his players, who gives the faith to his players. And I understand that. I admire that. And I think that that has been a large part of their success. So to have to now make a different decision and look differently at it is a challenge.
This is the Buck Stotts for Supergroups, first picked every week for Kubota Excavators, supergroups.com.au.
Oh, probably as a footy club and as a group of players and coaching staff, just stay the course and hang in there. You know, we played against an opponent today who, strangely enough, the whole footy world was up in arms about where Adelaide were positioned 2 or 3 years ago. And we're in a very, very similar boat to where they were. And you can just see the evolution of their side. We just know where we're at as a footy club. I thought we competed a lot better today. We're more consistent in our effort across the four quarters. They were just too strong and powerful for us in the air.
Well, there you had Alistair Clarkson talking about North Melbourne and their loss against Adelaide down in Tassie. One of his most difficult jobs at the moment is to manage expectations externally, and that's part of a coach's job because it does filter into the energy of your players. We spoke about how Geelong are playing and how the Flood is back. I think that the way North are going about at the moment is to try. They're really trying to teach their kids from the ground up, and I don't think you can play the style that wins, that looks like it's going to have you in contention. Now, I don't think you can play that style with a young group because it teaches them the wrong way to play footy. Does that make any sense?
So you're saying North can't play the way Geelong are playing?
No.
Because that sets them up for bad habits.
I just don't think it... I mean, they'll get bogged down in their back third.
Won't be able to score at all.
And the irony is their midfield is struggling to the point now that their defence, and they don't have key backs, effective key backs. So they need extra numbers behind the ball. So Clarko could go back to the future, and he could flood, and he could support his backs, and you'll see North Melbourne in, you know, maybe 12 goal versus 4 goal games.
Is it better than the alternative of this North ball rubbish that we heard throughout the preseason, where that's not setting them up for great habits either? Like, they're getting slaughtered off turnover. The opposition's ability to score from their back half is a real concern. There's definitely a lack of effort and pressure on the opposition and the opposition's team's ability to transition the footy. We saw what Hawthorn did to them last week, and this is Hawthorn who have won one game of footy. I mean, he's talking about comparing his team against sides coming up that are in a similar position. Not that there is young Adelaide, but they're not old. They're one of the youngest teams, and they've destroyed them. Mm. So has he got his game plan wrong for where this group is at, and is it the wrong way around? Should it be more defensively now rather than North ball rubbish that we saw?
Well, we know that that's just because we've spoken about North ball, and North ball was a media title
that they gave themselves.
Did they?
They put on that on the public record themselves.
So
North players.
So, yeah, so this is the way they speak about it internally.
This was the way they used to speak. They don't do it anymore.
Well, I would. Whilst we might focus on that, I guarantee you that during the week, they're talking about how they defend as well.
I hope so.
They're talking about how they're going to win contested ball, how they want to set up stoppage. I think the issue with North, and for the North fans out there, the issue that you've got at the moment is that your most talented players are the most young and inexperienced. So you're going to get, you know, fluctuations in performance. And there's no doubt.
What are you laughing at?
Oh, like Mitch, the producer, was on me about saying fluctuations. You can hear the dump button.
You've handled it nicely.
If you took four or five of North's most talented young players and put them in a GWS, put them in a Geelong, put them in a Sydney, they would look like they would look two, three, four times the players that they look at the moment.
So what's the way
in,
out?
In a structure
North
that's defined.
Fans don't want to hear patience. They don't want to hear references to Adelaide being 2 years ago. Because Adelaide, their actual stepladder was in line. Like they go from down the bottom, but then they win a couple more games. Then it's another, and then the progression is there that you can see. There's no progression. There's no improvement from a win-loss perspective at North. So when he speaks about other teams and comparing them to other teams, you could actually see that they were improving year on year. There isn't any of that improvement. And I get the feeling North fans are sick of being told to be patient.
Well, I think that there's going to be a lot more pain. They thought Clarkson
was the guy that was going to actually put them in a position to improve year on year.
Okay, well,
and he hasn't.
Well, let's rip the Band-Aid off. It's not just the coach. That's the messiah coaching idea is a fallacy.
But so they sold that wrong. I mean, there were the talk about, no, we didn't need a plan B because we had Alistair Clarkson, the positivity around that. That was the wrong message to send. It should have been a more of a whole club approach rather than paying one coach the figure that he is on, which means you don't get the support around him probably that other clubs have, that there is more a balanced distribution of the soft cap. When you pay the coach that much, it doesn't leave a lot for everyone else. And you're suggesting that there's a lot of other areas that North have to get right.
I think getting a playing group that has got the right age profile and the connection. Look, the coach needs tools in terms of his players to be able to go and build what he needs to build. North don't have, they don't, like Wardlaw's a great player and will be a very good player, and he's your bull inside. You don't have enough talent in there to win the ball and to go and service your forward line. Now, Larky's a very good key forward. There's zero key backs like that are effective at their role at the moment, and that's with due respect. I think Dawson's got some upside and got some capability, but there's very little intercept marking there. There's no Tom Stewart, there's no Nick Vlosten, and there's no key backs that are going to not just halve contests but win a contest and then give a chance to bounce. There's a bit of run off the ground, and that's where the bounce off the back with, you know, We've got McKercher. Fisher played as a sub, but he's given you a bit of bounce. She's obviously looking great, and he's a great young kid, you know, mature, great and very talented. But there's just few and far between at the moment, and to see the glue that pulls it all together, you still need talent in certain positions for the other talent of being an outside player or being a skillful player to be able to use the ball. There's just not enough meat and potatoes to take advantage of the cream on the cake.
Yeah, North fans, let us know your thoughts. 0433 98 11 16. Are you sick of being told to be patient? I get the feeling that you are. This is The Buck Stops Here, and we're doing it all thanks to Melbourne Airport Parking. You can book online for the best rates at melbourneairport.com.au, and for Sonos, experience game-changing sound this season with Sonos.
Yeah, it was really exciting. You know, we sort of knew the player we have. He's very clean with the ball in hand. He makes, I think the measure of a really good player is that you make others around you better, and that's what he did today. You know, his ability to find a target inside 50 is probably something we've lacked a little bit, and he started to bring that. You know, he's only going to get better as he gets fitter.
That was Damien Hardwick talking about Jake Rogers, who in his second game had a profound influence on the contest.
He's a left-footed Grind Myers. That's what he looks like. He's got a bit of a around-the-body sort of kicking style, but his ability to set up his teammates, as Dimmu was referring to there, and make them better. This was a huge game. He's had 22 five entries, kicked a goal, 8 score involvements, and every other club just must be pulling their hair out because it's another one of these academy prospects that just come through the production line.
Well, I'm putting that Darcy Jones was a player the day before who, you know, he and Harvey Thomas, I've said this consistently, the GWS boys, they look like they're 15. They were signing autographs for kids that looked older than them. The guys they were signing autographs had Mo's, and they were 3 years younger. But they're just young fellas. They come in and they've got traits. They've got speed. They run towards the goals direct and fast, but they're off the back of, you know, an established defensive structure. And this is different. So Dimmer is actually coaching a pretty much a man-on-man defence. He spoke about uncontested marks and that they got that they had nearly 50 in the first half, but less than 30 in the second. So that's obviously a key metric for the way Gold Coast are going about it. And that simplifies the way you defend, which actually gives you, and that pulls the game into contest as much as you possibly can. But it comes back down to your work rate and your work ethic needs to be high. So he's tipping into his players to be able to bring that to the table. But when you see blokes like Jake Rogers, Darcy Jones come in and play their roles and play their roles so early, it just shows you that, you know, if you can stockpick, if you can build your team, you can stockpick. Geez, you can find players that make a significant and substantial difference really quickly. But yeah, very impressive young men hitting the competition so early.
A few texts coming through. This one from Brendan in Brisbane. G'day, Barks. Long-time Interstate Kangas member based in Brisbane. My biz concern is our leaders, in particular our captains. 7 rounds in and neither captain has been in our best 4 or 5 players. We got it wrong there. When do we go to the market and throw big dollars at a key defender and a key forward? Could you consider making a selection statement with the captains at North?
They haven't been great, so neither Simkin nor McDonald. McDonald obviously came back off a pretty significant injury, but hasn't really been able to impact. Both of them haven't been able to impose their best traits. So, but where do you go from that? You know, you really do need your leaders to stand up, especially when you're in a situation like North. But there's no, you know, Paddy Cripps. There's no, I mean, Harley Reid, we've seen the energy that he gave West Coast. He wasn't in the game on the weekend, but it was Sam Durham for Essendon. Who's that guy, young kid, that's coming in and giving energy to the group with his desperation and his contest? We don't. Maybe Wardlaw, but there's just not enough going with him.
All right. We're in the Kogan Mobile Studio. They've got you covered with 120 gigs for $120 to use across 12 months. Kogan.com. It's clicking awesome.
A sports news update for Club Tokemwong, Australia's premier Murray River golfing destination with 2 top 40 golf courses. Talk to the Golf Package team today.
Tom Morris is in the studio for Club Tokenwall and the Murray. It's your next golfing holiday. Welcome in, Tom.
Thank you, Kane. Thank you, Bucks. I want to get both of your thoughts on Sam Mitchell yesterday and his pretty blunt feedback towards Jack Scrimshaw in the first quarter. So Jack Scrimshaw did a kick that he didn't like, and then Sarah Jones interviewed Sam Mitchell after Mitchell's tirade towards his team, towards his player. This is what Mitchell had to say to Sarah Jones at Fox Footy.
Sam, there was a moment with Jack Scrimshaw where he probably could have killed the ball. You were clearly unhappy with it. What did you say to him at quarter time?
Oh, just that we're past that. We conceded 3 goals really quickly and then we're going for big risky kicks where the instruction was the opposite.
So this was pretty volatile. I liked seeing it, but how often would that happen in a game that a coach would go straight out to a player in the modern day?
How many times did you do that, Bucks?
Once a game. Happens quite often. Yeah, so I think that if something's captured on camera these days and it's seen as a point of difference or something that's a little bit exceptional, then we do focus on it. But, you know, that's not abnormal at all to have a player, one, not follow instructions, happens, and then two, to have to, you know, straighten that player up. But, yeah, I think it's been made a focus is Sam Mitchell's demeanour, I suppose, in the last couple of weeks.
There's been a shift.
Well, yeah, and there's a shift in how we view it as well, but it's always a little bit more incremental than we perceive it in the media. But, yeah, there's no doubt that there's a little bit more on the line because the honeymoon period wears off.
And the expectations increase. Like, his expectations have increased and the performance hasn't. So with that comes a level of frustration, which we saw. But in terms of the feedback that player got, there's no issue with it. It'd be an issue if he was doing it every week and at every break, but he's not. On that occasion, the frustration boiled over. And as long as the player can cop it, which it looked like he could, I had no issue with it. What's happening with some contracts on the Gold Coast?
Yeah, so last Monday we noted that from then, first-round draftees for 2023 could re-sign, and we're waiting to see who the first-round draftee from last year is to re-sign, because it's a mandated three-year contract as of last November. This morning I can tell you that of the 20 players, the first one to pen a new deal will almost certainly be Gold Coast pick 9, Ethan Reid, who I expect will sign a two-year contract extension to his already 3 years, which will be the end of 2028. The club and his management, they're just dotting the I's, crossing the T's, I think what this is another example of the Gold Coast Suns justifying their academy and justifying their recruitment and commitment to young players that they bring in. So there's four of them they brought in, and I think it's probably going to be one of the most underrated draft hauls we've seen in recent years. They somehow managed to, well, they didn't somehow, they did manage to bring in four young players via their academy. And then this year, coming up, they have three top 20 picks. One's their own, one's tied to the Dogs, and one's tied to North. So they've created this situation where they've turned two first-round picks into seven across 2 years. And you could argue that the academy system is too advantageous to the Giants and the Suns, and they do need to pay more for their picks. But the AFL's not going to scrap it, despite what Victorian clubs are saying. And they'll have another crack at getting academy kids in the future.
If they don't win a premiership in the next 5 years off the back of this, maybe five's probably right, they've done something badly wrong. Yep. You've got the coach who knows what he's doing, and you've got this unbelievable... I was watching Jake Rogers' highlights from his junior days in the ad break, then this kid can be anything. Yeah. You've got Reid, you've got Walter, who Lee Matthews has said is the next Jonathan Brown. With the established players that they've already got, and players like Humphrey, there's a premiership there, maybe multiple, in the next 5 years. And then where does that rank with Damien Hardwick? Like, he's got three. If he ends up with, say, five, like, where does that sit him with the all-time great coaches? These are the discussions we're going to have. I know I'm probably jumping the gun.
Yeah, let's get him into the finals first.
No, I understand that, Bucks, but how could you fail when you've had the access to the draft that this team has had? If you're St Kilda, and there's a piece from Jay Clark in the Herald Sun this morning about trying to raid free agents, you can't compete. If you're Essendon, you can't compete. West Coast have one top 10 draft pick on their list, maybe two with Andrew Gaff. I'm not sure what they do. It must be depressing for them. Anyway.
But the Giants haven't won one yet, and they had the same sort of access.
Not this one draft haul.
No, that's true.
Two in a row.
Yeah. I remember way back when people were into Eddie talking about the free kick for the academies and how difficult that was going to be and how challenging that was going to be down the track. Is it still coming to fruition? Potentially.
Yeah. Rory Sloane's future?
Yeah, I need to be careful what I say here because I can't profess to know exactly what Rory Sloane is thinking or how he may or may not be wrestling with his football mortality. But I can say there are now enough people around Rory Sloane who do expect him to retire this year because of the effects or the ongoing danger of further injury to his eye, which is the reason he hasn't played so far this year. That would be unfortunate, clearly, but what I believe he and the people around him are weighing up is the risks of playing Sandful or playing for Adelaide when they're probably not going to win a flag versus long-term damage. And that will become clearer, I think, over the coming weeks and maybe even before the mid-season draft if it does materialise that way, which would be a sad way to finish, but it feels like there's no other option.
It just happens sometimes. It's not dissimilar to the concussion discussion that players are grappling with now because of the long-term effects. You've got a long life to lead post-football, and we're round eight. He hasn't played yet. He's not probably in their best 22 at the start of the year, so it's going to take him, I would think, 4 or 5 weeks playing Sandful. Then we get to round 13, 14. If they're not in premiership contention, you weigh it up and you go, well, what's the point?
Well, back in the day, you used to have players who used to decide to go up and play country and because they'd earn more money, like back in the 60s, 70s.
I think it still happens today.
Well, out of AFL.
No, but if you're looking at like a Sandful level player versus playing in the country.
Correct. So in the end, so this whole idea of, it's so sad. It's sad when anyone has choice taken away from them. But the fact is that playing AFL is a choice. It's something that you're privileged to do. So Rory Sloane's one of my favourites. And I've loved watching him go about his business. He's one I've admired from afar, not just the way he's done it on field, but the way he's carried himself off the field. He'll make the right decision for him, none of the AFL players are going to play forever, but he's made the very most of his time if he wasn't to get back out there.
Tom Morris is live in the studio giving us all the news. Patrick Dangerfield has done his hammy again.
Yeah, the Geelong expects this hamstring will be a minimum of 4 weeks. The hope is it won't be 8+, but we won't know officially until today or tomorrow. Just talking about Roy Sloan quickly. So the AFL is soon going to tell clubs how the money will be allocated when players are medically retired, e.g. Brayshaw and Nathan Murphy, and Peter Ryan reported in The Age last week that the longer the contract goes, the more the clubs will be on the hook for that money inside the salary cap. Do you think that's right or wrong if the league does that?
I think that all of the money should be in the salary cap.
Every last cent.
Every cent. Is concussion separate to other ailments that
players no one else gets medically retired with that term. No one else gets medically retired unless you get concussed.
What if you've got a really bad back?
Will Rory Sloane be medically retired?
Well, they won't call it medically retired because it's not concussion.
So you can only be medically retired on concussion?
That specific terminology is reserved for concussion, and that's it.
So Tom Langdon was in the middle of his career and had to retire because he has bone on bone on his knees and just couldn't move. So that's not a medical retirement.
And did that money get taken out of the salary cap?
No, that's one of the reasons that he held on for a little bit longer when he couldn't run, couldn't move, because he still had 18 months of a contract to work out, and the club were working out how they were going to manage that.
And how did they? Do you remember? Or can you say?
We looked after him into 21, which is 12 months into his last 12 months of his contract. And I don't know if you remember, but we were a bit tight at that point. But I can't understand why. I understand the content or the issue of the day is concussion and medical retirements due to concussion. But there are many other medical retirements that take place, and to separate and segregate one from another, I don't think he's accurate.
100% agree with that. Injuries at the Dogs.
Yeah, Jamari Eagle-Hagan is likely to return next week. He trained on Saturday. They expect him to be okay. Libba will play. He had gastro. Cody Waitman with an elbow. If this is a dislocation that requires surgery, that'll be 10 to 12 weeks. We'll know more today. It's the fourth time he's dislocated that. I think it's his left elbow. And just a quick one, we expect St Kilda to take Jack Higgins to the tribunal. We're still waiting to hear whether the Dogs take Riley West to the tribunal. He's been given a week for his bump on Brandon Walker.
Any other MRO news or anything from the games yesterday?
Well, I'm just interested in Marbio Chol. He was involved in two incidents. It's hard to know with the vision that I saw whether that gets cited and whether he gets a fine. Chad Wingard returned from a ruptured Achilles in the VFL. He only ruptured it last August, and he returned yesterday, kicked a half, played a half, kicked two goals and had 9 disposals, so a good return from him. And just a quick one on North Melbourne. In addition to a key defender, which they're clearly in need of, don't be surprised if North then also go after an experienced midfielder that's out of contract that they don't have to trade for. So some names: Dylan Scheel, Travis Boak, Seb Ross, Callan Ward. I don't think they can get Elliot
Yeo. Liam Shields.
Yeah, Liam.
Well, they've done that before. No, I know, they've done that before.
I know, but they want a bull that can protect the younger midfielders. Yeah. So that's one for the end of the year.
Right. Yeah, and those decisions are so crucial. You need to get the right character, but also someone who's got 2 or 3 years, but they need to be able to play the game the way that it's been asked to be played.
Tom Morris with the news.
Kane and Bucks. Can't stop addicted
to the shindig. Yeah, it's been a big morning already. If you're just joining us, Tom Morris has just departed the studio. He had all the news for us. You can catch up with that on the podcast. We're, of course, doing it all thanks to Melbourne Airport Parking. You can book online there for the best rates, melbourneairport.com.au. And for Sonos, experience game-changing sound this season with Sonos. Well, it was an absolute epic at the MCG Saturday twilight. 87,000 fans packed into the MCG to see a high-scoring classic. Geelong coming out on the right side of it by 13 points, and a man who's been doing it for a long time and was a star of that game, kicking 3 goals off the wing, is our next guest. Zach Tuohy is his name. Zach, thanks so much for your time.
Pleasure. Thanks for having me.
You must have been fresh. You'd been rested the previous week, and I guess you're reasonably comfortable with the way the club manages their older players like yourself, but geez, you look sharp, socks up, and kicking 3 goals off the wing.
Yeah, I did feel good. And look, the rotation of players is something Geelong have done really well for a long time. If it was left up to me, I'd like to play every week. But the results are kind of undeniable. I do feel a little bit better off a rest, so feeling good.
Is it pre-planned or is it a week-to-week thing where you have those discussions about how you're feeling and maybe having a week or two off? And what does the rest of the year look like for you in that space?
Yeah, it's slightly pre-planned. It's quite difficult to plan it, you know, 5-6 weeks in advance, or you might roughly look at the fixture and think that there's a good period that we might consider a rest. But football changes so much, and you know, selection who's available kind of dictates a lot of that as well. So for me, it might be a case that I play hopefully every game for the rest of the year, as I said, but probably it might be a case of once every 4 or 5 weeks I have a week off.
Zach, congrats on your game and for your team's form. On that same topic, I suppose, we saw your skipper go down with a hammy on the weekend, and you can't prevent all of the injuries, but I'm pretty sure that, yeah, he will be looked after, and it's good to be ahead of the ledger so that you, you know, can potentially have some young guys come in to try and replace his energy around the ball.
Yeah, obviously, it's hard to replace a player of Danger's calibre, just like it was difficult to replace somebody of Stewie's calibre this week. But we just have a long list of players that we're really comfortable to have play at AFL level. And you're right, look, sitting where we are now in terms of win-loss maybe takes a little bit of the pressure off. We're not chasing our tail. But yeah, look, he's virtually irreplaceable. He's a generational player. I thought he was... certainly very close to the best player on the ground by the time he went down. So yeah, it's unfortunate, but he's got a long run into hopefully what's going to be a long season. So we should get him back at the important time.
He gives terrific insights with his media performances. And one thing struck with me that he said in February, I just want to play this to you, Zach, and get your response on the back of this. Here he is speaking on his Real Adventures podcast in February.
We've changed from 3 main sessions a week to 2 main sessions. Mm. And the reason for that is we've actually really increased our high speed. So we've changed. So like personally, I've gone from like 450-odd metres for a week in terms of high speed. Now, high speed is above 24 k's an hour. And the reason behind it is to try and bulletproof hamstrings. So by the time you hit games, right, it should feel like games are almost a deload.
So I'm interested in your thoughts because you're of a similar age profile as Patrick. Was that your experience during the preseason, and was it discussed with the players that this is different and it may be a bit of a risk?
No, well, we each individually go through plans like every club does at the end of the season, and the change in off-season program, I think, is best reflected in our win-loss and not in this one soft tissue to an extraordinarily powerful, you know, 34-year-old athlete. He's just one of the unfortunate aspects of playing footy is that sometimes these things happen. So I put this more down to just bad luck than anything. It's extremely boring for you guys to hear this stuff, I know, but it did feel to me like an extraordinarily positive off-season, and it was noticeably faster than it's been in years gone by. But I think Danger went into the season feeling really good. I certainly feel great, and I would argue we're playing pretty well, so I would say it's a big tick. It's just an unfortunate injury that sometimes happens.
Zach, you played 6 seasons at another club, at Carlton, before you went to Geelong. I'm just fascinated by the club itself and how it continues to regenerate. Yeah, I think you look like you enjoy your, like as a club, you enjoy your work. The work-life balance seems to be, you know, to me from the outside, as good as any club is able to do it. What has your experience been? Obviously, you've matured and you're, the longer you do it, the better you get at it. But what is it about the club that really stands out in your experience?
Yeah, I think you're right. I mean, we seem to have struck a perfect work-life balance down here, and our geography might help. You're kind of out of the rat race of CBD living. And I came down here at a really good time for me. I had a young family at the time, and it was just a bit of a step back in terms of just the overall kind of pace of life, which really suited me. And look, I think it's largely driven by a few people at the club, but none more so than Scotty. I think he kind of appreciates that it's an extraordinarily stressful environment, and there's probably no need to add to that stress away from the weekend. So provided the players sort of rock up and train and do everything they're expected to do, the club repay us by giving us a huge amount of autonomy over our programme, a huge amount of time away from the club so that we can kind of refresh. And for me, it was just such a perfect kind of marriage, me and the Cats. Consider myself really fortunate to have been here. And then there's the knock-on effect of typically we are in contention most seasons, which just keeps you coming back.
You mentioned Scotty, and we spoke a little bit about Chris Fagan and where he's at with the Brisbane Lions. I'm not going to get you to comment on that, but but in terms of this, the trust that Scotty gives his senior players, and where does the challenge point come from him? How does he get that balance of being, you know, a partner in your careers and in your getting the best out of each individual, and then stepping above and then putting the challenge point on occasions where that might not where you might not be meeting the expectations that the team requires?
Well, the thing Scotty's done best from what I can see is that he's never forgotten how difficult the game is to play, and that comes across in how he treats the players. I've been at the Cats for a long time now. I've never gone into a review or a team meeting and felt as though I was about to be hung out to dry. And it's after a while you just get this sense that, well, if he's going to sort of facilitate me in my game and you know, maximize my skills, you feel obliged to kind of pay him back by doing everything you can. Look, I think you get coached, or we get coached really well, and most of what you do on game day is fairly automatic. And then the real art of coaching is how you can kind of change things up in real time. It's maybe one of the bonuses of having a few more experienced players that he can sling the magnets around, and we're all fairly comfortable to respond. But typically, I want to repay Scotty as much as I can, because I feel like he's given me, so far, 7 or 8 years of the most enjoyable football I've ever played.
Was there a jumper tug after one of your goals on the weekend, and did you get any feedback from the Carlton fans on that?
I have and have had a pretty good relationship with the Carlton supporters since I left. It must be said that the banter's been fairly positive, but as I was lining up for that first set shot, I could hear a few things over the fence. And it was more direct to a very small pocket of Carlton fans, but there was a little tap on the chest, yeah, after the... And I did it, to be fair, I actually gave the chest a little bang on the second goal, but that was more because it was kind of a cool goal, and I don't score cool goals. I score typical, just running, you know. So this one was kind of fun, and I never do that, so that's all that was.
That's good, we love it.
Do you have 300 in your sights, Zach? I mean, you're moving as well as ever, and you're only 25 away.
Yeah, it would be nice. It's not exactly right on my mind at the minute. It does seem quite a long way off. But, look, I'm in the same position I've been for a couple of years, which is that I'm not 25 anymore. I understand that these decisions for me are going to come closer to the end of the season, and I'll do it in conjunction with the club, and it'll be whatever it is, it'll be extremely amicable. But mentally, I'm certainly keen to keep going. I love my footy, and physically, I'm hanging in there.
There was a lot of confidence about the prospects of going back-to-back in 23 with the recruits that you brought in. Now, it didn't play out that way. Did you get the same feeling in the pre-season of this year than you did perhaps after the premiership, that it's going to take someone pretty good to beat us? Did you have that level of confidence, or was there doubt starting to creep in about how long you can stay up there for?
No, look, I mean, I've been sort of in this position often enough to know that, one, it's really hard to tell, but two, if any team was going to be able to kind of bounce back and turn this around pretty quickly, I just had absolute belief it would be us. And a lot of the guys we brought in, like, it takes some time to fully bed into a new system, and I think we're seeing those guys kind of step up, or really step up now, Jack Bowles and Tanner Bruin and these guys, even Jai Clark, who, you know, he didn't come from a different club, but he'd had some injuries and hadn't really played. So I was really confident going into this year that we would be extremely difficult to beat. But you just never know, because every single year there's a couple of teams that kind of jump up from that mid-table section and catch a few teams napping. But I was really confident we'd be a difficult side to beat this year, and so far that's been the case.
Why are you so difficult to beat, Zach? Is it your defensive structure? Is it the offense that you've added, the springboard slingshot yeah. style? What is the point of difference, do you think, in 24?
Yeah, we. I think we've got a lot of fairly highly specialised players for really kind of specific roles, and you know, every team has players that play specific roles really well, but I don't think there's too many Graham Myers and Brad Close duos getting around half forward lines. I don't think many teams appreciate just how good Zach Guthrie is. I think he's right up in the top echelon of defenders in the league. We have guys that, you know, we can be under extraordinary pressure for long periods of times in games, as we were at Saturday evening, and our backline just kind of holds up, and then it helps when you can kind of, you know, kick it forward to Jez and Hawk and guys like that. So I think, for the most part, we've just got some good players, but we do have some very highly specialised players.
What does life after football look like for you?
I'm not sure. I might dabble in the media. It looks pretty... Looks pretty easy, as difficult as you make it look.
Well, but, I was going to say, I was about to give you a compliment and say you make it look easy.
Look, I'm not sure. I've got a couple of cafes back in Ireland. Should I end up back there, I'll get stuck into that. But right now, I must admit, I do quite love Geelong and Australia life, so I might linger around here for a bit and see who wants me.
Good on you, mate. Well, hopefully there's a few more games left in you yet. By the weekend's evidence, it looks like that might be the case. Appreciate your time this morning, and congratulations also on your recent AFL Live membership. What an honour that must be for you. So good luck for the rest of the year. Appreciate your time.
Thank you, guys. Appreciate it.
Zach Tui there.
It's a bit for... to be said for just being a good bloke, isn't there? Like, just good, solid individuals. One thing that struck me about Geelong guys, when they were successful in the late 2000s, I remember thinking, look at our locker room, and, you know, we're boys, and I look at them, and, you know, saw them in a pub at one point, and they were men. They would sort of stand up, great characters, have a beer, have a chat, but respectful, you know, not louts, not big noting, not loud. And I think that's, I don't know whether that's the country attitude, but I think that's definitely something that's come through the Geelong programs, and Zach Tui's at the top of that.
Zach Tui there for Chemist Warehouse. The Chemist Warehouse Mother's Day fragrance sale is now on. We're in the Kogan Mobile Studio. They've got you covered with 120 gigs for $120 to use across 12 months. Kogan.com. It's clicking awesome. Zach Tui, our guest.
Kane and Bucks. Can't stop addicted to the
shindig. Questions without notice. For Aussies living life on the go, Signet phone accessories go the distance, keeping you connected and protected.
Questions without notice are for Signet. Power every moment with a Signet Power Bank. I want to speak about the Saints. Before we do that, let's have a listen to their coach after the game.
Look, we're up for a fight. We know their quality, particularly in the midfield. That's where a lot of their quality is, and we're trying to build out in there. So that was challenging for us all night. We strategised a lot, worked a lot, and enabled us to fight on, but not quite good enough.
Yeah, I just wonder when the pressure comes. Like, he spoke also about the amount of close games that they have lost, and that is accurate, but if you look at it a bit more forensically than that, they kicked the last six goals against the Giants. That game was over. Against Port Adelaide on the weekend, they were smashed in every way. The only thing that Port Adelaide didn't do was convert. They kicked 1-8, and they were challenged from a personnel point. They lost Aaliyah early, they lost Power Pepper, they lost Rosie, and the Saints still were nowhere near it other than on the scoreboard in every other metric. They were smashed against Richmond. They were beaten badly in the first half, and this is a Richmond side that's bottom two, probably, is because he's so good in the media. This is the question without notice. And he's a bit of a media darling. Is Ross Lyon a little bit untouchable? And should we be a bit more critical of the Saints' performance this year, considering there was high expectations off what they did last year, playing finals, versus the performances this year and where they sit amongst the best teams in the comp?
Does their narrow losses and their competitiveness not speak to the coach doing a good job in some shape or form?
Do you think they've been competitive, though? Do you think the narrow losses is masking the actual performance? Like, they weren't great last week, and they certainly weren't great on Friday night.
Well, it might not be masking the actual performance. It might be masking the deficiencies in their team and their list, which is fundamentally what a coach is trying to do.
So how did they produce what they produced last year?
They were a goal or two better, that's all. And they've dropped, yeah, so they have been unable to find the same level. They're the highest scoring team from the back half in transition. Number one in the AFL in the first 7 weeks at scoring from their back half. I think they've really missed. They look great early. The win against Collingwood was good. Hill's played really good footy, Brad Hill. I think, they missed Liam Henry, who was a great recruit for them. I think when you get Henry, Wanganeen Miller, Brad Hill up and about, I think Darcy Wilson on the wing has been excellent.
So you're telling me you're not concerned about the Saints?
I think Filippo's dropped right off, and he's a second-year Blues in many ways. I think they tried to cast him as a midfielder. But what I see is a coaching group that are learning things about their list in real time. I think they've made some brave calls about some of their players and some of their lists. But list management changes, to develop a midfield that's going to contend and can support the way you defend or the way that you want to attack. I don't think St Kilda have that midfield, and it's plain for all to see, and it's really difficult for the coach to front up every week and to have to answer questions in some ways about their performances when it's quite clearly, I reckon it can be slated back to a midfield that's one-paced and can't.
So it's a list issue more than anything with the Saints. And last year, they just overperformed with the list that they've got. And the expectation that off what you did last year, that you're going to improve because these young players have another pre-season, another year in the system, was misguided. Is that what you're saying?
I think that they just lack real quality in the middle. And they've got the same type of player in there. And we see now that you need to have that short speed. Garcia went in there and he looked like he had it against Butters, but he's like a 4 or 5 gamer. And he had a crack, but Seb Ross is one pace. Steele's one pace. When Crouch is in there, he's one pace. These are players. You try and get Sinclair in there from time to time, but then you're robbing Peter to pay Paul. I think they're not, like, their structure looks okay. Dougal Howard, has been lightly used, but he was poor on the weekend. Caminiti has a crack. If I'm a St Kilda fan, I would be looking. The expectation and narrative suggested that we're going to go better.
Mm.
And I think that was not really well placed from that narrative. So you might be a little bit disappointed. But there's clear holes in your list that can only be addressed at the end of the year. And I think the coach can't talk about that every week.
I'll give you the good news. North,
what do you got?
Hawthorn, Fremantle at home in the next three. So they just have to win all those three. And I suspect that they win all those three comfortably. After the news headlines, I'm sure you've got some hard-hitting questions without notice.
Of course.
Continuing with our questions without notice, Bucks.
Kane, the Gold Coast Suns, they're 4-3, so they've won those four at home. They've lost their three away. They go into the Q clash this week, so Brisbane may be gettable at the Gabba. And then they go to play the two games up in Darwin, North Melbourne first and then the Cats after that. Do they play finals this year? Have you seen enough from them to suggest that they're going to be able to take that very difficult step from, a 10-win season to a 13-win season?
Can I answer this in a strange way? They are not in the best 8 teams in the competition, mm-hmm. but they will play finals, if that makes sense, because it's not even. And they have the softest draw. And the AFL are desperate for them to play finals, and they've produced a very soft draw for them for that to be the case. So off the back of that, They are good enough to play finals and maximise the draw that they've got, but are they in the best eight teams in the competition? No.
All right. So if they do do that,
yep.
Are they doing it simply off maturing as a list, or are they doing it because of Damien Hardwick and his clarity?
No, I don't think it wouldn't matter. If Stewie Jew was there, they'd get the same result this year as what they will with Damien Hardwick. There'd be maybe perhaps a bit of the new coach bounce, but I haven't seen a whole heap of that. Like, I start the game really slowly yesterday. West Coast kicked the first. So I don't think there's been any dramatic shift other than these players that have been there for a while, and they're getting huge seasons out of Anderson and huge seasons out of Rao. But I think that would have been the same case with Stewie. Do you agree with that?
Yeah, I do. The midfield's established, and Jared Witz's performance on the weekend was huge. Great to see him continue on his way. I think they've got the right makeup and good structure, you know, bit of depth now, which helps to which is pressure for and competition for spots. But no, I think they're in pretty good shape.
We do, and we can flip from week to week, and you're reactive off one performance. But I feel like we need to mention Fremantle, because we are incredibly hard on them when they don't perform. I want to have a listen to their coach, because I thought that performance on Saturday night was really strong.
I think our contest work tonight was back to those of rounds of the earlier rounds. We probably connected inside 50 as well as we've done, and that composure with that kick going inside 50. I think we had 15 marks inside 50, which is probably season best. Yeah, it was nice to hit the scoreboard a bit more.
And I think I may have mentioned it last week, is do you give them the derby? Do you give them a mulligan? Because that's the only game that they've been poor consistently for the start of the year, albeit they had kicked 60 points in the 60s for 4 weeks in a row. Are we hard on Fremantle considering the age demographic of their list and how competitive they have been for, you know, six out of the seven games?
I think we are. And Fremantle have played really consistently. As you said, the derby was their worst performance. They were a goal and a half up on Carlton with 5 minutes to play and lost in different circumstances on Gather Round. They were a goal and a half up on Port Adelaide with 5 or 6 minutes to play and got done. So they're two sides that we see as, you know, either locked in top four teams or potential top four teams. So I think their performances have been really consistent. They've endured some personnel changes and some injuries, so which every club has, but Amos out is a big one because he's been, you know, quite significant for him in front of the ball. I think when they're sort of tall, we've already spoken about small forwards and how important they are. Frederick was back, gave him a burst of speed. Switzkowski still not in, and he's a really strong part of their performance. But I definitely do think that Freo, people have black banned Freo, and they get on the nose
really
quickly.
Unfairly?
I think so. Yeah, they've lost a lot of players. I think, I think it does come back down to the coach a little bit. He's as I said, he's internally he's a great relationship builder. I think that some people have a set against him and don't think he's provides enough energy or enough content in presses, etc. But I think he's very thorough. He's got a great relationship with his players, and I think he sets them up to succeed. And I think Freo are having a really strong season to date.
If you've got a question without notice, send it through. We've still got the Bulldogs to deal with. Why don't we do the Bulldog? You got one?
Yeah, no. I want to talk about spirit animals. Like, so off the back of Harley Reid and the energy that he's given West Coast Eagles, who's going to do that? Who's going to do that for Hawthorn? Who's going to do it for North?
Who's like, a spirit animal?
Yeah. So who are there? Protectors of energy and givers of energy and have that flood through their groups. Like, who's Hawthorn?
So what's happened to Sicily? What has happened? Because that's him.
Yeah.
You think
he is?
I think he is. I think he's aggressive. I think he's getting in the face of the opposition. I think he's been brilliant as a footballer. Where's that gone? Well, how can you explain the drop-off in the captain of Hawthorn? Because I watched a couple of his defensive efforts. I had to re-watch a few of them. He's not there for whatever reason that is. So I'm not sure what has happened to him. And for North, I don't think they've got one. I don't think North. It should be Zerha. Should be Zerha. He should be Brash. He should be Zerha should be what Jake Stringer was for Essendon on Anzac Day, but he's not.
I think Zerha is it.
Well, he's not, though. He should be it, but he's not.
I know you've got a set against him.
No, I don't at all. I think he's underperforms significantly for the talent that he's got.
I think playing at the pointy end at the front of North Melbourne's team at the moment is very difficult.
Because he hasn't been fit enough to be able to inject himself into the midfield.
No, when he's gone into midfield, he's made a distinct difference.
So why doesn't he play there more often and for longer?
The coach puts him where he needs to be. But, yeah, he's probably not fit enough to be a midfielder for four quarters, but he never has been. Jake Stringer's
Neither was Patrick Dangerfield when he started. Neither was Petrarca. Mm. Neither was Dustin Martin. Neither was Gary Ablett Jr. when he started.
And I think the other thing is if you've played that role or if you've played with that energy, I really do feel that over a long period of not quite getting there or your expectations not being met and your hopes, you know, this might be a year and then you don't start quite as well, I think that can wear those players down. So that might be what you're seeing in a Sicily. It might be what you're seeing in a Zerha. Like when you get your hopes stripped like so early in a season because the losses are mounting up here and I thought we were going to be better than this, that can be a real challenging period for leaders and players that have been on this sustained losing streak or like seasons where you haven't been able to progress or take the next step. So over 5, 6, 7 years, I think you see that happen. Mm. I think we saw it with Cripps a couple of years back before Carlton got real good. And so staying the course and getting over that speed hump from out of the finals to just in and then again to take another step to top four like that, they're big leaps to take. But it's in particular, you know, when you haven't been competitive and you're not winning enough, that can it takes its toll.
All right, the Chemist Warehouse Mother's Day fragrance sale is on now. We're powered by Kubota. Take on any job with Kubota's mowers, tractors and land pride attachments. Plenty more coming up next.
Kane and Bucks. Can't stop addicted to the shindig.
Less conversation, a little more action, please. Conversation starters for the Drain Man. Drain relining is the no dig, no drama way to rehabilitate your assets. The Drain Man.
Conversation starters are for the Drain Man. Block drains, call the experts the Drain Man. Let's have a listen to Luke Beveridge off the back of another loss.
Probably the most disappointing thing in the end is in an arm wrestle, and you know, ultimately, we've got to measure ourselves on how we come through these tight games. You know, against an opponent who's been stung the week before, and up until you know the last part of that last quarter, we were coming, you know, and we were giving ourselves a chance, even though the possession rate, a handful of their individuals with the volume of their involvement was concerning for us. We're just doing enough, and it's another one that got away for us, you know, as far as the close ones go.
Another one that got away. There's been some talk around Marcus Bontempelli spending 7 minutes on the bench in crunch time, and it wasn't just him. I was following that along as the game went on, and then the broadcaster picked it up, but Richards was on the bench for a significant portion, as was Darcy. So it was Richards, Darcy, who looked like he was going to be the match winner for the Dogs, and Bont. How does that happen? And
was all in the last quarter.
All in the last quarter, towards the back end of the last quarter. So last 12 minutes of the game, last 10 minutes of the game, Bontempelli spent 7 minutes sitting on the bench.
Yeah, you can get stuck. Mm. You can get stuck in that position. I remember, when was it? It was Gather Round, I reckon. Dawson looked like the only guy that was making the difference and on the Adelaide charge against Melbourne and was on the pine for 7 minutes after kicking a goal and looking like he was going to be the difference. So you want your match winners out there as much as possible. I mean, we saw it with Geordie DeGoey in the preliminary final last year, Collingwood v GWS, and you do have these circumstances where the ball might be caught on the other side of the field, and there's repeat stoppages, and there's no real chance to be able to interchange like for like. And you do go through scenarios, well, let's bring a forward off so that you get your midfielder on, then you change your midfielder, goes in there, and you can. There's another two or three ways that you can move the magnets.
What about
to be
just
up.
Resting him forward?
Well, you could do that, but you do want to rotate your player. If you think like we're going to give him a couple of minutes here so that he can come on and finish the last six, 7 minutes with a little bit more pep in his step, and that's not abnormal. You know, we were just talking to Zach Tuohy about resting for a week and then coming back fresh. You know, a 2 or 3 minute break into a 10 minute, you know, this is a call to arms. This is where the game's going to be won. It's done more often than not, and we do highlight the situations where it might not, where it looks like it's cost the game when one of your better players is sitting off. But happens more often, more often than we care to think, that the best laid plans don't quite come off.
I remember Matty Lloyd speaking on Classified a while ago, and I don't want to put words into his mouth, but he did question whether the only blemish on Bontempelli's amazing career is his finishing.
Mm.
And we saw it again from the top of the goal square. Mm. And they missed a number of opportunities late in the third term, gettable ones. Darcy missed one. Bontempelli missed one from the top of the goal square. And
that's the game, though, isn't it?
Really. But is it fair to question? I think it is fair. Is that the only blemish on Bontempelli, that 30 metres out, directly in front, he's never a certainty?
Yeah.
You'd have to go look at the numbers and his accuracy, and I think it's amplified in big moments. Do you think that's a fair criticism of Bont? Because it didn't happen again.
I'm not sure what his set shot percentage is. If I thought about like Pendle's career over the years, his set shot goal kicking probably hasn't been as elite as every other aspect of his game.
Fife's the other one. He's been poor.
But then when you go and play as a forward, you get to see that more often than not. I mean, I think did Georgiades kick one goal four? And like accuracy has a very significant say on the ultimate result, and that's one reason why Harry Mackay, taking that step between last year and this year has been a significant difference to Carlton and how you feel about their prospects and being able to win those close games. If you can nearly slate that back. Harry Mackay's goal kicking has won. It means that Carlton are five. They're 5-2 instead of being 2-5. Like, and that's how marginal it can be. But yes, Bontempelli could have finished off those. There's no doubt that. That the best are always going to be criticised or held to a higher standard than others.
Mm. Nothing outstanding sticks out on his stat sheet, just holistic terms, 210 goals, 174 behinds. It's not the best accuracy, but it's not disastrous.
Sometimes the midfielder, you're taking shots through the top of the
snaps
arc.
Or from stoppage,
And there's a little bit more of that, whereas if you're a tall forward or a marking forward, you might have taken a mark and be having shots from sort of 30, 35 out, 45 degree angle. You'd certainly hope to be able to finish more often than not.
A message from United Energy: be prepared for extreme weather. Sign up for SMS outage alerts at unitedenergy.com.au/notify. Today's weather update: Shower 2 and 17 in Melbourne, cloudy and 20 in Adelaide.